Easy Natural English with Liam, an English listening podcast. Hello everyone, how have you all been? I hope that you've been well. You might have noticed that I didn't put up an episode last week. I took a week off, and that is because I've been busy with a bunch of things, and at the same time, my youngest daughter got a little bit sick, and she still is a bit sick, but she's doing much better now. But that was pretty hard for a while last week. If any of you have young children or have had young children, then you'll know that it could be very difficult when you have a baby that's sick and they're not sleeping very well and they're very irritable and crying a lot. It can be a lot of hard work, but thankfully she's doing better now. As I said, still a bit sick, but she's doing better and is sleeping better and eating better, and everything's getting a bit easier again. So here I am back to do another episode, and today is going to be a bit of a history lesson, and it's a topic that a lot of people are talking about at the moment, and we are going to talk about the history of Israel and Palestine. And a lot of people have a lot of opinions about this, as I'm sure you've all seen on the internet and in the streets and in conversations with people. So I'm not going to, you know, be on one side or the other. I'm not going to put too much opinion into this, but I'm just going to go over the history, and then you can think a little bit about your opinion and how you feel about it. So let's get into today's episode. So this story really starts in 1917, and in 1917 there was a nation called Palestine, and it was mostly people of Arab origin. There were some Jewish people living there, but it was mostly an Arab country. And it was the British government that made a declaration, and they said that the Jewish people need a place to live, a place to call their own country, because before that, you might know already, Jewish people were sort of spread out over Europe and over the Middle East and in America and in lots of different countries, but they didn't really have their own country. So the British government decided that Palestine should be the place that Jewish people can call their own country. And if you're wondering, why did they choose to go to Palestine? Why were all these Jewish people moving to Palestine and asking the UK for help to set up a nation? Well, the reason is because 2,000 years prior to that, so a very long time ago, a Jewish state existed in that location with its capital as Jerusalem, which you may have heard of before if you've ever heard any stories from the Bible. That is supposed to be the place where Jesus is from, if I'm remembering rightly. I'm not a Christian, so I haven't read the Bible that much, but yeah, Jerusalem is a very sort of holy, sacred place for Christians, for Jewish people, and for Muslims as well. But around that time, 2,000 years ago, that is when the Roman Empire still existed, and the Romans invaded this Jewish state, and that was the beginning of the Jewish diaspora, or basically this phenomenon of all the Jewish people being spread out around the world. And there's always been this belief in the Jewish texts that Israel, this location, which was Palestine before the Jewish people went back there, this place that they called Israel was sort of home to them, and it was always talked about in the Jewish texts. And there is this concept that's called Zionism, which is basically the sort of return to the home. And that was always just a kind of concept and kind of a spiritual idea. It was not really something that people were putting into practice until the late 19th century, when a Austro-Hungarian Jew, whose name I might not pronounce very well, Theodor Herzl, he started saying that in Europe there was a lot of anti-Semitic persecution. And anti-Semitic means sort of anti-Jewish, means discrimination to Jewish people. And he said that Europe is no longer safe for us, and we need to have our own country. We need a place where we can be safe. And Palestine at that time was a colony of the UK, of Great Britain. So he started, people started communicating with the UK and saying, hey, you should give us back our former state in Israel. And then by 1992, the UK and the League of Nations, so now it's called the United Nations, at that time it was the League of Nations, they endorsed this idea, they agreed with this idea, and they said, okay, let's set up a Jewish territory there. So a lot of Jewish migrants started traveling there, mostly from Europe. And of course, this increased greatly as the Nazis in Germany started to rise and gain power. And, you know, more and more Jewish people were trying to escape this persecution in Europe. And in the 1930s, they lost their citizenship in Europe. So lots of Jewish people migrated to this this place called Israel. So within just 20 years, from 1922 to 1941, the Palestine's Jewish population grew from 84,000 to 474,000. So there's a huge increase over 20 years. So of course, this made a big impact on the way things were happening in this country. So a lot of people didn't like this idea. A lot of the Arab population were perhaps a little overwhelmed by this huge influx of Jewish people. So between, in the 1930s, towards the end of the 1930s, there were a lot of the Arab population that took part in a rebellion, and they wanted to end the British occupation, and they wanted to stop the Jewish immigration. And at the same time, in response to this, the Jewish migrants that were there, they'd formed militant groups, and they started attacking the British and the Palestinian people, the Arab Palestinians. So there was sort of a lot of fighting going on. And then the European Holocaust happened, led by the Nazis, and this gained a lot of support for Israel and for the Jewish people, because of course there were terrible things happening to them in Europe. So a lot of people sort of started to gain more sympathy for them and said, okay, perhaps we should help them out and we should help them to form this state. So in 1947, that is when the United Nations, now the United Nations, previously the League of Nations, the United Nations adopted a policy, and they said, let's divide Palestine into two independent states. We're going to have one Jewish state and one Arab state, and Jerusalem in the center will be under the United Nations control. However, the Arabs living there, of course, were not so happy about this idea because, you know, it was their country before, and suddenly these Jewish people moved in, and backed by Europe, they have lost a huge part of their country. And they didn't like the idea that the Jewish migrants that were a minority in the country were given the majority of the land. So they were given, despite being a smaller population, they were given a lot more of the country, a lot larger portion of the land. So from the moment that Israel was actually formed, the Arab-Israeli war had already started. So just with the beginning of the country was also the beginning of the war between Palestine and Israel. So in 1948, Israel declared their independence. And the very next day, Egypt, Iraq, Lebanon, Jordan, and Syria invaded. And these Arab countries with their armies, they were planning to wipe out the whole state. But in the end, Israel won. And by the end of the war, very many Palestinian Arabs had been displaced from their home. They had to leave their home. And for the Israeli people who had survived this invasion in the of what they saw as their country, they saw it as kind of a second Holocaust. So they had just sort of survived this terrible situation in Europe. And now this second situation, which, like I said, to them, they saw it as a sort of second Holocaust. But for the Palestinian Arabs, this, of course, was, you know, was an equal tragedy for them. They had all been displaced. They had to leave their homes. So, of course, a terrible situation for everybody involved. And by the end of the war, the Israelis had held on to the land that was allocated to them by the United Nations, and they had also grabbed a lot of extra land which was previously said to be for the Arab Palestinians, but it was taken away from them. So Israel had kind of gained more of the land. And as for the east of Jerusalem and West Bank, that was occupied by Jordan, which is a predominantly Muslim country, and Egypt controlled the Gaza Strip, which again is a predominantly Muslim country. And none of these Arab states signed any peace treaties, and none of them recognized Israel's right to exist. So for all the countries sort of surrounding Israel, they all sort of said, you know, this country doesn't exist. We don't recognize its official status. And then following these events, there was sort of two main big wars. One was in 1967, known as the Six-Day War. And this began when Syria and Egypt started fighting against Israel. Israel apparently sort of knew the attack was coming, so they responded very quickly. And this war lasted for 6 days, which is why it's called the Six-Day War. And by the end of it, Israel had taken control of Jerusalem, the West Bank, the Gaza Strip, and the Sinai Peninsula. So the Gaza Strip is the bit that you've probably been hearing a lot about in the news at the moment. And since then, those areas came under Israeli military occupation. So this is still what's happening in Gaza today, which, like, if you've watched the news or seen any pictures in the newspaper, you might see these kind of fences and these gates that the Palestinian people need to go through, and they have to show passes to the Israeli soldiers. They have just been occupying these areas, and the people are kind of stuck in there, and they don't really have the freedom to move around and do what they want. And that's also why Israel has control over things like their electricity and their water supply. And you might have seen in the news that the Israeli government cut off the water and the electric and the sort of supplies going in and out of the country, which a lot of people around the world have been calling an international war crime, because it is a kind of collective punishment that is punishing the local civilians who are not having any part in any of the fighting. So I just said that there were two main wars. So one of them was this Six-Day War, and the other one is known as the Yom Kippur War because it happened over the Yom Kippur holiday. And again, it ended with Israel being victorious against Egypt and Syria, who were involved. But it had a really big toll on the country, just like any war, you know, war always does. It's never a good thing for anybody. It turned out much worse for the Israeli people than they expected. And that was the beginning of a lot of sort of political talks with lots of other countries getting involved. And in 1979, Egypt was the first Arab country to sign a peace deal with Israel. So they said, you know, let's sort of stop fighting. And that was the beginning of, some Arab countries sort of giving into the idea that Israel existed as a state. And then that brings us up to the 90s. And in the 1990s, things sort of started to slow down a little bit. And in 1993, Yasser Arafat, who was the leader of the Palestine Liberation Organization, or PLO, he met with the Israeli Prime Minister at that time, whose name was Yitzhak Rabin. They met and sort of made some deals in terms of creating peace in the area known as the Oslo Accords. And at the time, everybody had high hopes for this. A lot of people thought that this would sort of be the beginning of the end. Palestine recognized, officially recognized the Israeli state, and Israel said that they would start removing their troops from Gaza. And both of the politicians involved actually won Nobel Peace Prizes because, a lot of people were quite positive about that idea. However, most of the things that were promised never actually happened. And then in 1995, an Israeli person assassinated Rabin, their own prime minister. And after that, a wave of Palestinian fighting struck Israel, and between 2000 and 2005 there was a lot of fighting, a lot of war that led to many Israelis and Palestinians dying. And that is when Israel decided to construct a wall around the West Bank and withdrew its troops from Gaza. And so a lot of the Palestinian people didn't agree with the deal that Arafat had made, because to make this deal, he had to agree to a lot of conditions, and that made life more difficult for the Palestinian people, where they now needed passes to go through checkpoints, they had to apply for work permits, and basically just a lot of their life was being controlled by the Israeli government. So a lot of people felt like they had lost a lot of their freedom. They were feeling a bit frustrated, and this is what is said to have led to the popularity of Hamas, who were then a new group that was gaining popularity because, you know, they said that we're not going to recognize Israel as a state, and we are going to create an Islamic state, and we're going to sort of bring back the way of living that, you know, that we want and that we were used to. And when the Palestinian territories held an election in 2006, Hamas won a majority and they became the ruling party. But Israel and the USA and the EU all recognized Hamas as a terrorist group, so they opposed its victory and they sided with Hamas's rival, Fatah. And after these sort of went into a civil war, by the end of it, Hamas controlled the Gaza Strip and Fatah controlled the West Bank. So the two major parts of the nation were divided. And since then, there hasn't been another election. So Hamas has just kept the power since then with no election. And they've been closed off due to sanctions, and due to the control of Egypt and Israel, they've been closed off from the world in Gaza, and they haven't been able to import weapons and things like that to support their cause. But Iran became one of Hamas's main sponsors, who were helping and they were supplying it with weapons, and they apparently made a lot of tunnels so they could get weapons and supplies and all those things into the area. So they've never had anywhere close to the power that Israel has had. So whenever they go to war, tends to be a lot more Palestinian people dying in response to any of these sort of skirmishes that go on. So, for example, in 2009, an Israeli invasion that lasted for 6 days resulted in over 1,400 Palestinians dying. But in comparison, there were 13 Israelis that died. So that's 13 to over 1,400. And in 2014, another battle or war resulted in 73 Israelis dying, but over 2,200 Palestinians dying, which is, as I said, due to this sort of huge power imbalance. And that has always sort of been Israel's policy, or their sort of tactic, is whenever there's an attack or a threat from Hamas, they've always sort of decided to respond disproportionately. So they've always responded with a lot of bombing and a lot of attacking to sort of try to discourage any further attacks, so to try to stop them from thinking about attacking again, which has resulted in a lot of tragedy for the people in Gaza. So because so many sort of older people have died in Gaza, the country is now 50% children. So I think it's a population of about 2 million people, and half of them are children. And because of the sort of situation there with Israel controlling them, a lot of international groups say that it's kind of a giant prison. They say, like, the people are stuck there. So whenever they go to war, a lot of civilians are inevitably killed by this fighting. And who's to blame is sort of, you know, this is what a lot of people have different opinions about. A lot of people, there are a lot of people that say it's Hamas's fault. They're a dictatorship. And, you know, if they didn't keep fighting, then Israel wouldn't keep bombing them. But then there is the other side where people say that this is Israel's fault because they are controlling them. They're making people frustrated. You know, they're sort of pushing people to fight like this, and then responding in this disproportionate way, which is killing a lot of civilians, whether directly through bombing or indirectly by cutting off food and water, and sort of just generally controlling the area. So the opinion is sort of split, and as I said, you've probably seen a lot of sort of fighting going on the internet these days. And this was all kicked off after Hamas invaded the south of Israel, and they killed an estimated 1,300 Israelis. They also captured about 150 Israelis and took them back to Gaza as hostages. And then after that, you probably saw in the news that Israel dropped a load of sort of letters onto Gaza and told everybody that, hey, we're going to attack Hamas, so if you're a civilian, you should leave your home. But the United Nations have said that this evacuation order would just be impossible, and they said that it wouldn't be able to happen without devastating humanitarian consequences. So it's this sort of, it's all these things that are going on that are getting people very heated in this debate, because, as I said, there's a lot of civilians living in Palestine, and, you know, they don't have the freedom to leave, and they're being told to evacuate. And there was actually some news just the other day that, you know, they were being told you should go south, and then now Israel appears to have attacked the south, which is where the people were evacuating to, which they told them to do. So, there's a lot of different opinions on sort of what's going on here. Like I said, I don't really want to give much of an opinion on it because there's a lot of people doing that. In general, of course, war is a terrible thing that results in no good for anybody. And I don't really know what the solution is. I guess from now we're just gonna have to see what's going to happen. This could be We could see like Israel completely taking control of Gaza now. We could see Hamas like sort of rising more, perhaps gaining more support. Who knows what's going to happen from here on out? We'll just have to wait and see, I guess. And if anybody is sort of involved in this or knows anyone that's involved in this, then I hope that you're okay, and I hope all your relatives and friends are okay. So anyway, that's all from me today. Quite a heavy episode with a lot of information. So if it's difficult to follow, then you can always go and listen again. Also, if you'd like to read the transcript, if you found it kind of hard to understand everything I was saying, you can see the transcript on my Patreon page, and there is a link for that in the description of the podcast. So thank you all very much for listening today, and I'll see you back here next time.